Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the A10 Talk Podcast. I'm Sam Basil, joined tonight by KG, Sean Vitalis, William Bazone. And guys, I feel like one thing that I always either start or finish a podcast with is, you know, updates, news, predictions about your favorite 15 teams in college basketball. We've been saying that for the past 2 years. Because we've been so excited that Loyola Chicago has been, our newest member in the Atlantic 10. But in another 2 years, we'll start saying, once again, your favorite 14 teams in college basketball. Because as of this week, we found out, as I'm sure a lot of you already know by now, we will see UMass as a full member of the MAC starting in the 2025-26 school year. This was first reported by Nicole Auerbach, the senior college football insider, or one of the senior college football insiders for The Athletic. It was officially confirmed by UMass Athletics today, February 29th. Clearly, you know, considering this is being reported by, you know, a college football insider, the MAC is an FBS conference. The driving factor for this decision is college football. For, you know, those of you who don't follow UMass too closely but follow college football, the Minutemen, while being a full member of the Atlantic 10 for a very long time, have been a football independent for several years. They were a member of the MAC until about like the middle of the 2010s, and then they became independent, and now, because, you know, with everything going on in college football and realignment and expanding playoffs, it's probably the better move for them to be part of a conference. So now they're going to be a full-time member of the MAC. I think this caught a lot of people off guard. This caught a lot of people maybe on half guard, right? There are a lot of people who were surprised at the timing of the announcement, but not surprised at the announcement happening at all. Obviously, we have a member of the UMass community here, a UMass fan, KG. So the floor is yours. What are your quick thoughts on UMass departing the Atlantic 10 for the MAC?
I'm still shell-shocked. I knew it was coming. I can tell you that right now. I knew it was coming just because, I'm sorry, our football team cannot be sustainable as an FBS independent, not like Notre Dame and UConn, which are going to be the two teams that are left in FBS football after UMass makes the move to the MAC. But what kills me the most is to see that one of the only two full founding members left in the A-10 is leaving the A-10 because of football. That's what's killing me the most, and that's what pains me the most. UMass and George Washington were the two founding members that have been left in the A-10 since it first founded. Duquesne has been with the A-10 for almost that same time frame. They did leave, like they were a founding member, but they did leave briefly for one season, but then came back to the A-10 just to give context. And then basically some of our other A-10 teams have been in here for a long period of time, like Rhode Island, St. Joe's, even LaSalle have been all been in for long periods of time, as well as St. Bonaventure. But honestly, for someone who's grown up around the UMass program since, well, I basically could walk and talk, it just kind of came at the weirdest time possible for UMass fans, especially after UMass men's basketball. Granted, they didn't win this game. They had their highest attended men's basketball game since the opening game of the 2014-2015 season, literally the season after they came off the A-10. Like, it came off of the NCAA tournament being, like, one of the big teams in the, A-10 that year. Six bids from the A-10 going into the NCAA tournament. I believe that was when I was in fourth grade, when we made it to the NCAA tournament, and now I'm a sophomore in college. So, a lot has changed in a decade. But, honestly, it's just the news, like, came at a weird time. I felt like it would have, if anything was going to come, it was going to be probably, I knew it was going to be sooner rather than later, but I was kind of hoping it would be around this time next year, kind of, just so in that way I would be get that. This is me being a little selfish now. I was kind of hoping that we would have get through next season and the season after, and then it would be a swap. So get through the 25, 26 season, and then for 26, 27, I was kind of hoping for the swap because then I could get through all 4 years covering for A10 Talk for UMass men's and women's basketball, and everything. But I will just say this now, I'm not leaving the website. I will be finding another website to continue UMass coverage just because this team loves me too much, and well, the athletic department really had like the, don't want to see me and Michael Bergman getting put out because they're leaving the conference. So they're very helpful. They're going to be helpful with this. I don't have any more information yet, but I'm sure they'll be helpful with it. They will be doing a press conference next Thursday, I believe, at 11 a.m. in their in their football practice facility. Honestly, just from what our chancellor has said and what from Ryan Bamford has said, the move makes sense. And the last time that UMass was in a independent or was in a league for football was with the MAC. The MAC actually wanted us back then to become all sports to the MAC, but UMass did not want to do that as we had a very, very strong program for men's basketball, and now it just be really taking a huge blow for our men's basketball team at that time. But honestly, Frank Martin is like ready for the change. He's going to stay through it right now. Mike Loeffler, even though they have not made comments, I'm sure Mike Loeffler, the women's coach, will be staying through this too. It'll actually be easier for the women's team to rebuild the program probably in a weaker conference. The A10 conference is such a strong conference for women's basketball this season that it kind of just has really bashed around the Minute Woman, and they've only gotten 2 wins on this season. So they finally broke that losing streak, Sam, to refer back to me screaming pain in the microphone from the last episode, if you guys listen to it. But I mean, some UMass fans have taken this pretty well. Others have like our understanding of it as Sam has mentioned, like just because, like, yes, it's because it's a move on football. Because, well, unfortunately, today, college sports roll around football. And that kind of forced, that's kind of why we saw the Pac-12 start to go under. I don't feel that the A10 is in any shape and form of being impacted because most of the teams in the A10 don't have FBS football or they don't have a football team, period. So there's no harm or foul really on it. If they do have a football team, it's FCS. So when you hear me saying FBS and FBS, for those who don't know that or don't follow football, college football closely, FBS is a football bowl subdivision. FCS is football championship subdivision. So basically Division 1A and Division 1AA, with FBS being Division 1A. Just for our listeners who don't fully understand the whole difference with that. But honestly, it's kind of, I wasn't fully on board with it, but then like after just like finally letting it soak in, it definitely has helped me like realize, okay, yep, this is gonna happen, but this change is better for the better of athletics. The men's basketball team, while the MAC, yes, Kurt, if you look at the net rankings of conference rankings, the A10 currently sits number 8, and this season the MAC sits at 24. So if you look at it like this, and I'm just putting it like this, really, UMass is going to a worse basketball conference. But in the end, the MAC doesn't really get many teams into the tournament other than Autobid. UMass could really go run that, really run the conference and just basically make the NCAA tournament a lot. But also, too, this probably will be a stepping stone for UMass athletics. It's just in that way football can get better. And so they can hopefully get into a better conference that'll actually help out both football and basketball, something like the Lovely American, which is where former A10 member Temple is currently doing. And well, their football program's kind of a little floundering a little bit right now, only having 4 wins since 2020, I believe. I don't quote me on that because I'm not positive, but it's another A10 team leaving because of football. And well, that's what college football or college sports really like evolve around. for conferences is really football.
Yeah. Great points all around. A great perspective from obviously a longtime UMass fan, a great contributor to our blog, along with Michael Bergman about UMass hoops. Just, A10 hoops in general, you're a great contributor for, but especially UMass. And there are a couple things in in all of that that you said that I kind of want to break down here. So first, from a football perspective, it's the right move. It's, if we're just talking football, it's absolutely the right move. With the way that college football is going, the idea of being an FBS independent, not named Notre Dame, it's something, it's an idea of antiquity. It kind of has to go away, in my personal opinion. There's no way you're going to be able to stay afloat. There's no way you're going to be able to get establish a good identity in terms of recruiting, in terms of what your actual goals are. And so by joining the MAC, you just added so much brand identity to UMass football that I think is going to help them in the long run. The next thing that you said, in terms of official statements, right? Obviously, this news came before UMass was able to make an official announcement. They made that today, February 29th. But the day that this news dropped, or sorry, I think it was the day or the day after, on February 27th, Commissioner McGlade of the A10 made a statement basically saying that, that the A10 understands UMass's need to do this, given the environment of FBS football, and that the A10, basically they're trying to say that the A10 is trying to maintain their reputation as a premier other than football sports conference, right? Specifically basketball. A lot of people were talking about how the A10 will try and either fill this hole or, move on from UMass's departure. And there's been a lot of discussion. There are people on both sides. I mean, I think there are people right now, as any kind of conference realignment happens, they're fishing for potential new A10 members. But right now, there's also a large sect, which I think I might be in this camp for the near future, of saying that maybe it's okay if the A10 just remains at 14 teams. I think the general idea around it is that while it's always good to find new conference members, new schools to join, you don't want to jump at it just to, induct a new member just to induct a new member. You kind of want to find a school that fits the identity of this conference, that's a quality team, a quality program to bring into this conference, that is a good TV market, has good facilities, good staff behind it, and that can help you get more, especially on the basketball side, more teams into the NCAA tournament year after year.
I mean, yeah, I just coming from Indiana, it's Big Ten, also a 14 team conference, currently, at least. Obviously that fluctuates. Well, it's for now because it's fluctuating right now. But I think that one thing that I enjoy personally about the Big Ten is the whole Big Ten East, Big Ten West sort of deal that they've done with having a decent amount of teams in the conference. And I mean, the Big Ten is also obviously with the West Coast additions about as spread out as you can get for a conference. But I think that it can make it really fun sometimes where it makes rivalries I think even more intense when it's separated into an East and West sort of deal. And I mean that's what we do with almost every professional sport is it's the league is separated into conferences and divisions. Not that we need to go that deep, but I think making like an A10, like coastal and like an A10 Midwest or something like that. I think that there's some fun things that, not that they're gonna come into play, but I think the opportunity is definitely there to make some changes about how things are done in the regular season or just I don't know. I think it would be cool to maximize the branding and the publicity that the A10 could get out of it. And I agree with you. I think that I don't feel like we need an instant replacement or anything like that. That the A-10 is definitely in the position to wait for another high-level school to come to us. I mean, I think Loyola was a great addition in the past year or two, and has really strengthened the basketball conference, and as well as other sports. I mean, as we were talking about women's volleyball a little bit before we started, and I mean, first year Loyola, my freshman year, UD, and UD was conference champ like 2 or 3 years prior, and Loyola came and just smoked everybody, which is cool. It's cool to have a team come into a conference and, really contribute and be a serious addition. So I think A-10 shouldn't be in any rush, but at the same time, if they can get a school that's going to come in, earn money, branding rights, TV deals, all of that sort of stuff, then, absolutely welcome someone new.
Just quickly want to say this, like, again, this is coming from the UMass kind of aspect. You're leaving a conference that does have more regionally closer, like, teams, like Rhode Island. You're leaving Fordham. You're leaving out with LaSalle, St. Joe's, even Duquesne, just as some closer schools. Your closest school is literally gonna be UBuffalo. That's the closest school that they'll have, and which probably will become their rival. I don't know. But honestly, this is going to be a bit of a missing piece of in the regional area of New England. Because New England's always had two A-10 men's and women's basketball teams. After 25, or 24, 25 season, next season, they're only going to have one. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see the A-10 kind of look at teams up in New England, essentially, just to kind of name two that do kind of come to mind. I think of Vermont, who has had very rich history of making the NCAA tournament, but having not had like the spurts of going long like Loyola had. You could also look at UMass Lowell, which is also coming from America East. Which is a new, actually, they just joined Division One sports in 2013, funny enough. The head coach of the UMass Lowell team has done a great job of building that program up since the move to Division One. And while they beat UMass last year, they could have beaten UMass this year if they had a good day playing. And honestly, I feel like keeping someone from the New England area, even if it's like another Rhode Island team, which I don't think it will be. Like, even if it's like Bryant, or even if there's like a team in Connecticut or something, if just keeping like another team regionally in New England, I think would be a good idea. But honestly, sustainability, I don't know how that would necessarily work. But there's a lot of teams in New England that you could choose from, really, in Division One sports, if you look at it that way. If you were looking to replace them right away, but not necessarily.
Yeah, I'm not going to spend too long on it. You guys have pretty much hit everything that I wanted to say kind of on the head. But I think, KG, one thing I was surprised you didn't mention was Frank Martin's kind of ominous comments last week about, it's tough being a one bid league. It's almost like he knew before everybody else did that this was sort of like coming. And it'll be interesting to see if he stays past the rebuild. But, I know the people on Twitter have kind of been, well, the MAC's kind of a cupcake conference, yap, yap, yap. But being from Cleveland and knowing a lot of these Ohio schools, they're no slouch schools. I mean, you look at Akron, 45 minutes down the road from me, they're a good program. You look at a team like Toledo, who was consistently competed for the MAC championship, and it sucks that the MAC's only a one-bid league because now, UMass will pretty much be a 13 seed every year out of the MAC, and that's it. And it's disappointing, but I don't know if they're going to run the tables early. I think there's a lot of really good programs in there, and I think UMass's offensive potential, if that can continue to be a priority for them, they could be a fun addition to the league. But Sam, I think I'm with you and Sean as well. I think the Atlantic 10 having 15 teams is it's a weird number, and obviously being the Loyola guy, it's like, well, you kind of have to take up that spot.
Yeah,
But
thanks, man.
of course, had to take one for the team there. But I think 14 going forward is it's a good number because you look at teams that are on the bubble, right? Or needed another quad one or quad two win to really be considered by the tournament to be like, all right, yeah, maybe we'll give you an extra bid, right? It's like if you have 14 teams, it gives you an extra opportunity for a home and home with a stronger opponent, and it can give you more leverage to, again, build your resume up and give yourself a real chance of being a second team and stealing a bid. So that's just really my two cents on it. It is very surprising to see just how far UMass is going to have to travel to these games. I think about the athletes, like, that's, you know, to have to travel to, like, even like out here to Northern Illinois, here in Chicago, it's like pretty much the same as it would be to Loyola. But even, you know, you're traveling to Ohio and New York and Michigan all the time. It's like, I can't imagine what that's going to be like to travel that far, especially being, and all for all those other schools, it's a big adjustment. So props to them and what they do, because it's a job, really, you know, and it really does become more of one when you have to travel all the time. So just exciting just to, you know, see that, oh, maybe there's another team or maybe there's not. We'll see. I know there's been some rumors flowing around. Vermont is one. I think that's possible, KG. But again, they have a tiny gym, right? I mean, they're not playing in anything that's really nice. So more money would have to go into the program, and maybe going to the Atlantic 10 would be that way in there. I don't know how I feel about UMass Lowell, though. I don't really think like a satellite school should be considered for a conference like the A-10, not to be prestigious or anything. Loyola could also be considered a satellite school because there's four of them across the country. So I think for right now, 14 is a good number, and we'll see what happens over the next 2-3 seasons, and it'll be fun for sure.
Just because you mentioned with all the travel, I know there were rumors flying around too about UMass to the CUSA. That was a whole bunch of stuff in the off season. So honestly, us going to the MAC is much better travel wise if you look at it that way, just because you're still up in like the northern half of the US and you're not having to constantly travel down to like Texas, all the way out to New Mexico, things like that. So honestly, it's a better conference for them to be in. And plus, it's not going to take basketball down as much as it would in the CUSA. So, I mean, and to your point with the whole UMass Lowell thing, honestly, I just threw out UMass Lowell just because they've been good as of late, but I don't like Lowell that much. Lowell is just like Rhode Island. Both schools I hate like a passion, but I'll be trying to grow and start to like Rhode Island a little bit, just because if I'm going to continue doing stuff for the website, I kind of do need to have a team that I'm kind of attached to, but I'm attached to all 14 teams outside of UMass on the women's side. So you'll definitely be having a lot more women's content coming from me in 2 years from now. So, but honestly, I'm still trying to like absorb it and like really take it all in coming from that UMass fan perspective.
Yeah, great points all around. KG, you know, if you need to be swayed to a certain team, I could probably send you some Fordham merch up your way. But one thing I wanted
to see merch I can get from any school. So if you guys want to, if anyone wants to try to sway me to support your team in A-10, feel free to shoot me a message on Twitter and I may be swayed. As long as it's not a certain school in mind that I do have, but I will be swayed towards any other schools, but I will not mention which team that is. It could just be because of a former UMass coach being there right now, but he could also be gone within the next month or so. I don't even know with the coaching carousel yet, but I am open for all 14 teams. If you guys want to try to bribe me with free merch, I'll gladly take free merch.
To kind of give some detail on, you know, talking about Vermont. I feel like we're all kind of in agreement that Vermont would be a great addition. One thing that has been kind of talked about, especially today with all this renewed interest, right? Vermont obviously is a really good school in terms of basketball. They have made 3 out of the last 4 played NCAA tournaments. They're kind of an America East powerhouse. The facilities are not there. However, that being said, there is active plans on totally rehauling their basketball facilities, like that, their entire athletic complex. Again, another caveat to that, the last major reporting on that was in February of 2023. A lot of local papers
Specifically, the Burlington Free Press were reporting that this project is about $87 million short. So I haven't seen a lot of updates, a lot of major updates since then. That's been a whole year since that last report. So I could be, totally missing something here. But again, I think this it's another reason why the A-10, it might be beneficial for them to wait, see where Vermont kind of gets with this renovation project. And then once it either is finished or has a realistic end goal, maybe extend them the invite. I don't know. I think that'd be an interesting school to kind of replace that New England market. Because, again, I know I'm not a New England person, but it's like, I don't know who else you would want to pick. Yeah, Bryant, maybe. Again, facilities, I don't think are there.
Merrimack. They're moving to the other MAC.
Yeah.
AA's after this season, I believe. So, and they're also kind of coming new out of they're coming new out of being from D2 still too. So it's still a whole bunch of process that's going through with them for that.
Yeah, and again, I just don't think a school transitioning out of D2 right now is a school for the A-10 to shoot for.
Yeah, I mean, I think as someone that is in Dayton, which is the biggest market in the A-10 as far as like fan attendance and facilities, that sort of stuff. I think it would be killer to try and grab someone not from a lower conference that's trying to come up, but maybe someone from an equal or slightly bigger conference that's tired of getting the crap kicked out of them. And I think that it would just be a great opportunity to get a team with a bigger following, with some more pull as far as nationally televised games and stuff like that. I mean, Dayton fans have been talking about going to the Big East forever. I have no faith that that will happen, while I'm in school. But I mean, I think about a team like DePaul or something like that. They're stinking it up in the Power Five. And I think that, maybe money wise, it's benefiting them. But I think a team like that, I can't really think of any others off the top of my head, but a team that's struggling in the Power Five that might not need the football side of things, because I think that's a big draw for a lot of those is the football aspect. But a team that can get away with the football stuff, that where they might come in and win a lot at a slightly lower level than what they're at. I just think that might be exciting for getting a bigger program instead of turning to a smaller program that's had some success recently. Maybe the flip side of a team that's, they've got the facilities, they've got the, whatever, they don't have the success. They've been reeking in some other conference, and maybe they can spend some time in the A-10, retune some stuff and get back to winning. I don't know. Maybe that would be exciting.
You take a stray shot at DePaul last week.
2 weeks
now
ago.
Or 2 weeks ago. And now you're extending them the olive branch. I see you, Sean. But no,
Put it on the bingo card.
Yeah,
every week. I'm going to do it.
Blue Demon hater. That's going to be my burner Twitter. These are honestly all unintentional. Just DePaul comes to mind with like Loyola Chicago being in the conference. I feel like that they would have a market that might work for the A-10. They're also just out of the Power Five, the only schools I can come up with that I could see them making a transition down, possibly, just off the top of my head. But our DePaul fans, if we have any random Blue Demon lifelong supporters, you're in my thoughts and prayers.
But I'm just going to say this very quickly. DePaul women's basketball, outside of getting their butt handed to them by UConn basically every single season in that conference, has one of the another long tenured coach on the women's side that has a lot of wins and a lot of prestige. So that would probably impact their women's team a little more negatively than it would help positively on the men's side. So that's just my two cents on the whole DePaul thing. That's just because, again, someone who watches both sides, who knows a lot about both men's and women's, DePaul women are actually a good team compared to DePaul men's basketball. So just kind of throwing a little more salt into the wounds of any DePaul fans out there listening to us. But it is also a true fact that DePaul women are actually better than the men's basketball teams.
Yeah. And I think DePaul, to bring back something that you said earlier as well, it's also a school that I was discussing with Riley Frayne of Mid Major Madness, right? Who's a big A-10 head, St. Joe's alum. We were kind of bouncing back some schools, right? A couple of days ago, Vermont, obviously one of them. DePaul was a reach, but you know, it's a possibility. You know, I wouldn't really say so. I would say it's like the slimmest of slim possibilities, but only really in the sense that at this point in conference realignment, anything's possible. That I feel like adding DePaul, you know, if the Atlantic 10 is willing to ignore the idea of, you know, teams competing in the same media market, that would further the possibility of something you said earlier, Sean, in bringing back maybe an East-West division kind of structure. Again, a long shot. That's something that hasn't been seen in the Atlantic 10 since 2005. It's not seen anywhere in college basketball, D1. And, you know, as of in the 2024 season, it's not really going to be seen much in FBS football either. Even with, like, the conference that you brought up as an example, now a bi-coastal Big Ten. So, look, I don't think the A-10 is going to be the one to start this trend, but if they could, if they want to, I think it'd be kind of cool. If anyone else has any more thoughts on conference realignment, get them out now.
Georgetown to the A-10? David Korn would be happy with that. I'm sorry. David Korn would be happy to that. Just referring back to some of our Georgetown stunts from last season. Honestly, that would be cool to see Ed Cooley in the A-10, but I think Georgetown will actually get a better startup. Just since we're pulling from Big East, figured I might as well throw the other team that's pretty bad, but...
Blasphemous. We're wrapping up this topic. We're wrapping it up. All right. No more conference realignment talk. Let's talk about seeding on the men's side, right? We are, as of today, less than 2 weeks away from tip-off in the Atlantic 10 tournament down in Brooklyn. Most teams in this league have anywhere from 2 to 3 games left to play in conference play. It feels like most of the double bye has been locked down. Richmond's going to get the double bye. Dayton's going to get the double bye. And Loyola Chicago has, I believe they've clinched the double bye with a 12-3 record. They're 3.5 games up on St. Bonaventure, who's only got 2 games left to play. So they're in. I know we kind of covered it a lot on the last time the four of us were on here. But Bass, just now that it's official, Loyola going from the basement of the conference in their first year to a double bye. How does it feel? What does it say about this team? And what does it say about, you know, Loyola Chicago being the prime, like, you know, a potential prime example of the type of schools that the A-10 wants to go for should they go back to 15?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. I still stand by the fact that I think there should be 14 teams. But it's cool to be the 15th. It's cool to be the newest member of this conference. I think after the first year last year, it was tough. You know, I didn't really know where we were going to go because, you know, most nights we were looking like, we just didn't want to be there. We looked like we were getting outworked. We would go down by, you know, these deficits that we'd faced all season long and just not be able to feel like we could finish the game. Every time you just went down by 7, 8, 9, 10 plus, it's just like, well, it's over. You know, it's just nobody really wanted to be there. But I think Drew Valentine, you know, he talked about it at our last home game against Mason. You know, you could sit there and feel sorry for yourselves, but, you know, the people who stuck around, I think that really just shows just how much belief there is in the culture at Loyola. Like, there were a lot of people that could have just said, you know what, this team really is not where I want to be. You know, they're washed. You know, they're not going to have that same success they had in the Valley. But, you know, the people that stayed, they really believed. Braden Norris, you know, to be honest with you, could have gone Power Five. He could have been a really nice bench piece for one of those SEC or even a Big Ten school, as much as it pains me to say it, but he really could have gone Power Five. But he's like, no, I want to spend my fifth year here. And he and Philip Alston, I think the two captains of this team, have really just been the ones helping Drew recruit and bring people in and sell them on this culture. And that's something that Coach Valentine emphasizes a lot, is the culture. And just having a winning culture is important, you know, and I think that's what, again, as we've kind of talked about throughout the show, what you want to bring in with a team. And Sean, I think your point was interesting about finding a team in a Power Five that's struggling and bring them into the Atlantic 10 and give them a chance to be successful, you know, adding to some quad one games, adding to some more competitive scheduling. And it's exciting, but yeah, it's just, I'm in shock. Even, you know, it's been such an exciting year to cover this team, and, you know, just seeing them, no deficit seems too much. Obviously, you can turn to the St. Bonaventure game on Tuesday night. Yes, I know we did not play a good game. Our heads were not in it. We are very, very, very focused on Friday. I will say it transparently as possible. We were focused on that Dayton game. We just didn't look like we wanted to be there. We're like, we're ready. We're ready to play the Flyers. We want to play them. And you know what? I don't blame them. It's a big game, right? You know, it would have been great to pick up a quad one win against Bonna, but just didn't go our way. We didn't look ready. We just looked out of it, and we went down by 15 in the first half. I'm like, we don't look like a team that wants to win. We don't look like a team that's going to come back. So as a team that's looking to make a difference at the conference tournament, you can't have those nights. And it sucks because, you know, Loyola has yet to beat a top four team in the conference. They lost to VCU. They lost to Richmond. That Richmond game could have gone another way. I'll just say it lightly. And we also have yet to play Dayton, right? I mean, that's a big game to really decide, like, is Loyola legit? Because that's the one knock everybody seems to have on the Ramblers, is they haven't beaten any of the top five or top four teams. You know, it's great if you can beat 5 through 15, well, 14 rather, but you know, if you can't beat the top four, do you really have what it takes to be a real threat in this league? And maybe that'll impact if we are able to sneak into an at-large, and if we win tomorrow, do we move up in the net? Do we have a chance to get some more votes in the AP poll, in the USA Today coaches poll? We got a few this week, but, you know, does that win against Dayton change a lot? I don't know. And just, you know, it's just overall exciting to watch this team be competitive. And I think no matter however way the season ends up, we can't go any lower. We're locked in at the four at the lowest, and that could very well give us an NIT bid come the end of conference tournament time. So that's exciting to have postseason basketball at the very least kind of locked up, but still March is very much on the table, and time will tell if we can live up to the task of beating the real juggernauts of the conference.
Yeah, where you finished with that point was exactly where I wanted to go next, which is great. Like you said, it's great to feel comfortable in the double bye, but the circumstances in which you've played so far this season and who you have yet to play this season confirm that you can't at this point just sim these next three games, right, and wait for the tournament. Like you said, you haven't beaten anybody else in the top five. You've lost to Richmond, VCU, and St. Bonaventure, and you haven't played Dayton. What is there to learn most for this Loyola team in these last three games? And as you're thinking about potential tournament matchups, right? Whoever's going to meet you in the third round here, what kind of things would potentially worry you, and what kind of potential opponents would you like to see that would match up well against Loyola Chicago?
To be honest with you, I'd love to see a third St. Joe's game. We've done really, really well against them in the two games that we played. They've been competitive. They've been exciting. I might be a little scared to face Lynn Greer again, but gosh dang it, you know, they've given us a really good run for our money both times. And I'd love to see it happen again and really be a challenge to this team. But I think what this team can learn from that loss, obviously it's one thing to win seven straight. Everybody's just off that dopamine rush. Oh my God, we're back. We're so back, baby. You know, it's just like, but sometimes that just overtakes you. And then I'm going to Twitter and I'm seeing people like, oh my God, we're done. It's over. You know, but there are just some people in the crowd that are like, we needed this loss, right? Like, I mean, it's great to get another quad one game under your belt. Your own 4-1, 3-2 in quad two. Would be nice to have at least one win in quad one. But I mean, this loss was important for us because, again, like you said, you can't sim these last three games. You have to fight to the very end because, again, if you finish in the fourth seed, you might have to play a different team. If you finish in the third seed, you might have something a little bit more comfortable that works for you and the strengths of your team. So really, you have the quad one game against Dayton, quad two on the road against Davidson, and then quad four against LaSalle at home. So really, it's just about getting the tournament legs ready, getting ready for whatever you have, because after that game on Saturday, you don't play again, the ninth, that is, Saturday the ninth against LaSalle, that's senior day. You probably won't play again until Thursday. So you've got 6 days, and two of those are probably going to be, you're traveling to Brooklyn on Monday. You practice, you do what you got to do and get ready, or you practice here. I don't know. Like, I'm not up with all the logistics of our team and all that, but you know, just get ready. No opponent is too easy. No opponent is too hard. You just have to take it game by game. And a lot of the guys have been emphasizing that, but it's kind of weird just to see that game against Bonaventure. It just kind of puts a sour taste in your mouth. That's a loss you needed. It's humbling, and it tells the guys, hey, we got to have a consistent mindset and finish every game how we finished it throughout the season. Whether that means you come back from 10 down or you're up by 20 against Mason, you have to finish every game as if it's the championship game in the Atlantic 10. You cannot afford to let your guard down and play easy and expect to be successful. Not at all. So that's really what I think is the biggest lesson from that Bonaventure game. And really the big message for these next three is just to keep finishing. And hopefully it gives us a nice three seed at best, one seed. Well, maybe one seed at the best, and you know, two or three seed at the worst.
Yeah. Excellent points. Got to stay in it, especially against their opponent who they're taking on this week in Friday 10. The Dayton Flyers. Sean, Dayton, after dropping a game to George Mason last week, had a bit of a get-right game. I know coaches don't really like to, you know, so there are a lot of coaches that don't like to use that term sometimes. But this game against Davidson, you know, obviously not the strongest Wildcats team. They won by 14. What about this game? Maybe has you feeling a little bit better about Dayton. Maybe is pointing out some new things that you feel like they might need to work on. And how does it tee them up for this game against Loyola Chicago?
Hey, I'm not a coach. Give me that get right game. You know, I'm all about it. I mean, I am honestly like I sometimes that's what you need. And Dayton's got a tough two out of the last three. We're on the road Friday. We're a 1.5-point favorite on the road, but this is a Loyola team that has kind of come out of nowhere this year and already clinched a double bye. Like, you know, they're here to play. And so, yeah, I think it's a huge test for Dayton. Super important for the seeding to see how that'll shake out for both teams. And then we're on the road again at SLU. That one, you know, kind of a break, I feel like. But, I mean, again, you can't take any games off. And that would be really a silly one to go into St. Louis and, you know, ease off and let one get away from you. You definitely don't want to do that, just like what Baz was saying. And then the home regular season closer is VCU, who took us down. That was only scored 47 points in that game. That was a really tough loss on the road. So we definitely want to get right in that one and just go into the A-10 tournament with a win. I mean, I think it's just great for the morale, for the boost. As much as it's great to be a double bye, that means you've got a lot of time off. And whoever you're going to play in that third round just won one or two games. So, you know, they're hot. They're feeling good. They're trying to make a run and knock off, you know, whatever seed we end up. And I think that's how it is for any double bye team is, you've got that X on your back. Everybody, wants to take you down and advance another round. Because just like, most years in the A10, I mean, it's a win and you're in sort of tournament for a lot of the teams. Dayton, the only one that might be able to, lose and still get that at large bid. But part of that depends on how this Loyola game goes, how that VCU game goes. If we go 1-2 the next week and a half, I'm gonna feel a lot less confident about that at large bid. Probably gonna have to get to the championship, and then maybe lose a tight one to still get the at large. I'm feeling confident as a Dayton fan. Loved that Davidson game. I'm an Indianapolis guy, so I watch the Pacers. I watch the Dayton Flyers. I watch the fastest offense in the NBA. At one point, number one ever offense in the NBA. I watch the 350th slowest offense, or I should say 350th fastest offense in Division One basketball. So it's very interesting to see the two different takes. But in that Davidson game, Flyers were getting transition points, got out and running, pressing on defense. A different game than most that we've played this season. And I thought it was fun. I think that the team, sometime in practice, pregame, whatever, kind of had that wake up call of like, we got to go now. Those days of like, we've got time to develop, we've got time to, to turn up. That's, pretty much over. We've got a week and a half, and you're into the tournament. And this is a Dayton team that a year ago was kind of in the same spot, earlier in the season. But I mean, went into the season ranked, went in with a ton of hype, and we were not playing in March. So I don't think that that's going to happen this year. I think that we've done enough to kind of lock in our tournament needs for March. But at the same time, you don't want to let any games slip away from you. And it would be great to find a way to win the regular season, win the A10 tournament, something Dayton hasn't done. And I maybe that 2014 year, I'm not sure if they won the regular season and won the tournament. I'm not up on all of that, but I don't think that it's been done in a very, very long time. So yeah, I mean, I think just pedal to the metal for the Flyers right now. Be great to go into Chicago and come away with a win. It's an ESPN2 game, 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock for those Central fans. I don't know what you're doing in the Central time zone for the
It's the
A10.
best time zone. What are you talking about? 8 o'clock. Hey, it's great. I can be done with football at 11 instead of midnight. I can watch basketball at 8 o'clock. I mean, come on. Like, who wouldn't want that an hour earlier?
Yeah, all those DePaul fans in the Central time zone. I don't know what they're doing. But no, I think for the Flyers, we're in a great spot. Super happy with where we're at. The team is healthy. I think that was our biggest thing last year was, I mean, we just had a rotating cast. I think that we've got it locked in. The potential's there. We've just got to throw it all together. But very excited for Friday, Friday 10 against Loyola Chicago. And then a week from Tuesday, that VCU game. Because there's still, I think, personally, I still think there's going to be a ton up in the air going into that VCU game. I feel like that's how it always ends up is down to the last game played. Things are changing in the standings with the A10.
Absolutely. Great way to tee up a great weekend of men's basketball in the Atlantic 10. And then after Friday 10, we've got a lot of games on Saturday. Some really good stuff. One that I want to tee up, because it's a team that we haven't talked about in a while on this podcast. But it's a team that's won two games in a row, and that's the Fordham Rams. Last week, they won their first ever Friday 10 game against Duquesne. And then on Tuesday, they had a 61-60 thriller against George Mason. Both those games at home to break that early, that beginning, 0-6 start at home in Atlantic 10 play. The crowd at Rose Hill Gym on Friday was great. It was the whiteout game. The crowd on Tuesday, well, not as many people showed up because, it's a Tuesday night. Still great, still really getting into it after, George Mason led 19-18 at halftime.
And then that game exploded into a 61-60 win for the Rams. Player that hit the game winner, who has been having a great stretch and, you know, just a phenomenal final season with the Rams, has been Kyle Rose. In his career at Fordham, Kyle Rose has had 4 20-point games. Three of those have happened this season. This year, obviously, he also set the record for most games played as a Fordham Ram on the men's basketball team. He, you know, something that Coach Urgo talks about all the time, he's just a guy that embodies the name on the front of that jersey. So this team that he's leading that still has a chance at a single bye, you know, that gap from fifth down to, you know, honestly, 11th is so open right now in the Atlantic 10. Continues, that chance continues for them at St. Joe's this weekend. So, you know, I think a lot of people were down on the Rams this year, but I think, you know, it's just a team to keep your eye on. Any other games on the men's side that catch your guys' eyes?
For me personally, of course I have to mention it, especially because it's a nationally televised game. UMass versus Davidson. UMass is doing is going to be closing out their two-game road stint down in North Carolina to essentially try to see if they can get a fourth win away from the Mullen Center that are true road games, as they've now gotten three road wins in conference play, being over St. Louis, George Washington just recently on Tuesday, and of course, you can't forget Richmond. So honestly, I would say UMass versus Davidson is going to be a big one, as well as you can't forget about this other very, very big one, especially as it could be really depending on what VCU stands for the double bye, as well as where UMass and St. Bonaventure could end up in that whole double bye contention talk, because VCU travels crosstown to the Robins Center to face off against the Richmond Spiders, who has already secured that double bye contention. So honestly, it's two nationally televised games I just mentioned too. One of them is actually going to be a really, really good game to watch, as well as UMass. Well, I'm sorry, if you're not a UMass fan, this UMass men's basketball team has done some great works. This is the best UMass team since the 2013-14 team. I've said this all season long. I will keep saying it until the season's over. This is a team that really deserves to be watched. Even if it's on TV, I'll be doing coverage remotely for that game. But honestly, those two games are both going to be really good ones to watch, especially just that it'll depend on where people end up for seeds in the tournament.
I think another one kind of as a push off of that is you got Duquesne and George Mason at 1 Central time, the best time zone, might I add. It's an important game, right? Because Mason's kind of been reeling, and Duquesne, after a really tough start to conference play, it's very much been like a tale of two seasons for both teams. You know, Mason was up there for the longest time, and then they've slowly started to come down. Duquesne was in the cellar for a while, and now they're on the come up, and that game really could decide the difference between pillow fight or actually getting a bye in the tournament. So I think that's one that's got my eye. Of course, the biggest game of the weekend probably has to be VCU and Richmond, one that I will most definitely be watching. Obviously, I'm biased. I got to say Friday 10 tomorrow, Loyola and Dayton, it's going to be a great game. But, I mean, most of the games just really aren't sticking out to me other than, you know, Duquesne and Mason, VCU, Richmond. And, yeah, I guess we'll see what happens with UMass, because if they win, then they would technically, I believe, have the tiebreaker over VCU.
Correct.
Based on their head-to-head matchup where UMass put up a cricket score and won by over 20 points, which is clearly one of the most shocking results of the season, as evidenced by my...
Also the Richmond win, too, is a very shocking one, too.
Yes, I can't forget about that one.
But honestly, like, it's kind of an added perk since we're talking about seeding quickly. UMass and St. Bonaventure are both currently tied in the standings. This weekend is the bye weekend for St. Bonaventure. UMass has two games left on the season, like Bonaventure. So this really, UMass, if they can win out these next two games, sorry, Sam, yes, that means they beat your Fordham Rams on Wednesday next week, but
It's okay.
Basically, if UMass can win out and if the Bonnies somehow either split as they play George Washington and St. Louis, but I don't think they'll split because those are the two bottom teams in the conference. If basically we're rooting for VCU to lose out and basically either for St. Bonaventure to split the rest of their games or lose out as well in order to get that double bye, just to kind of talk about the teams that are above us right now. But at worst, UMass can't finish below five or at below 500. They can finish 9-9 in conference play if things work out in their favor.
I've got a sleeper game for the weekend, and you mentioned one of them, St. Louis, Rhode Island. Give me that game. That is a Saturday, 4 o'clock. And it honestly has, I think, more meaning than a lot of people would give it. Rhode Island sitting at 5-10, tied with Davidson, 5-10. LaSalle, 5-11. You go above that. Fordham, whoa, hey now, 6-9. All right. So if we have a Fordham loss, we've got Fordham at 6-10. We have a Rhode Island win. They're at 6-10. Davidson, maybe they'll win. They're at 6-10. You know, if a few teams, if some of those teams lose, they might be tied with LaSalle at 5-11. You know, I, as a Dayton fan, probably won't see those teams, hopefully when we get to the tournament time, but I hope not. Cause that means something's gone wrong for another team, but I think it's cool that the bottom of that bracket, is, I feel like just as interesting as the top part. You know, the top four seeds of the tournament, who knows where they're going to be 1 through 4. And I think that the first round, the people that aren't going to get any buys, who knows where they're going to be along that line. And, you know, I think that that's going to be a surprisingly fun game to watch. And just furthermore proof that the A-10 top to bottom is extremely tight in those groups. There's nobody that is, well, you can make arguments for someone that is all the way at the top or all the way at the bottom. But, you know, I would say teams 1 through 13, 2 through 14, however you want to slice it, it's all up for grabs and a lot of movement left to go. So that's definitely my sleeper. You know, just because you see SLU or Rhode Island, a bottom five team in the standings, you know, tune in. Watch your A-10 basketball.
Yeah, this Saturday is fantastic. Like you said, 4 you through 10.
Fantastic?
Frantastic, exactly.
As well as Franktastic?
It is Frantastic. Yeah, like you said, you know, to correct myself before, I said 5 through 11. It's really 4 through 10. That's the big race right now. So, yeah, every game this Saturday is worth watching, as well as every game this Saturday on the women's side of the Atlantic 10. As many of you know, this Saturday is the final day of regular season basketball for Atlantic 10 women's basketball. This earlier this week was the end of the regular season for UMass women's basketball. This final day of regular season basketball for the Atlantic 10 women's side, 7 games. KG, what are, you know, the most important games for you, or all of them the most important games?
There's a lot that are very, or they're basically 14 of the 15 teams, as you've already said, Sam, are in action on Saturday. My UMass Minute Women are not in action. They just wrapped up their regular season against St. Bonaventure. And, well, UMass was able to fill the blank space in the win column. They just had the Arizona night last night. So I'll be having my article out for the recap of that women's game. So, of course, I do have some Taylor Swift puns thrown into my article. And, well, Baz could tell you last night I was sending in all of my tweets in the group chat whenever I had those Taylor Swift references. And, honestly, I thought I was doing pretty good with them. And, I mean, the Bonnies were trying to tell UMass you need to calm down. But, well, UMass didn't want to calm down. They were fearless in it. So, but honestly, I'm happy that the Minute Women do have somewhat of a, like, momentum going into the tournament, even though they will be the 14th seed. Talking seeding-wise, there are a lot of games that are very important on this Saturday, especially because, well, the number one seed is not locked in still. If somehow, I will be full on amazed if the lowest team in the A-10 can somehow pull off the biggest upset in A-10 women's basketball this season of the Richmond versus St. Bonaventure at St. Bonaventure for closing. Because if Richmond wins that game, they will clinch the regular season title. But if they lose that game, here's where I'm going and pulling up Daniel Frank's lovely article they put out today to help me out with this. They spent several hours doing a lot of math for this, so please give a huge shout out to Daniel Frank for that. But Richmond can clinch the one seed with a win over St. Bonaventure, and or if Mason loses to VCU. But they'll clinch the two seed with a loss to St. Bonaventure and Mason beating VCU. So there are still some big games left in the A-10 on the women's side. With that being said, I just mentioned Mason versus VCU. That's a big one for the top four, especially St. Joe's versus Duquesne as well. So honestly, the Fordham Rams have been killing it on the women's side over the past like 3 weeks too. You got to give them credit. I mean, yeah, from when we last talked, Davidson had postponed or forfeited a game against Dayton, and then they ended up having to forfeit their home game against Fordham that following Saturday. And, well, the injury bug strikes again for the unfortunate Wildcats as Maddie Plank, one of their senior players that was still able to play, went down with an injury. I don't have the extent of what her injury is yet. No updates yet, but hopefully nothing too serious. But Davidson does play against St. Louis. Really the only teams that are locked into their seeds, I would say, are the bottom of the bottom, which are really LaSalle clinching the 13 seed, UMass clinching the 14, and well, St. Bonaventure with the 15, even if St. Bonaventure can pull off an upset in Olean, which, again, I don't know how likely that will be, but I will be amazed if that does happen. But honestly, it'll be interesting. My main thing that I'll be intrigued on is to see if Davidson is actually able to play on Saturday night, or if they will have to forfeit due to, basically, how do I want to put it? If they have to forfeit because of injuries again. So, and that's honestly a bad taste to have going into the tournament. Kind of sucks for St. Louis fans because it's supposed to be their senior night to honor their seniors. So honestly, there's a lot of sour taste if there is another forfeit on Davidson's part, or if even Davidson will be able to compete in this and if it will be made a 14-seed tournament. But honestly, every single game on this women's side really does matter. Just because, again, every single seed from 1 to 12 is still open for grabs. I mean, Dayton could end up anywhere from being, they'll clinch the 11th seed with a win over Rhode Island or a loss, or GW losing to Loyola. Or they'll clinch the 12th seed with a loss to Rhode Island and a George Washington win over Loyola. So, honestly, if you're a UMass fan, yes, I am purposely picking on Dayton here for this because not trying to make you upset, Sean, for this at all, but this is the one team that UMass has beaten outside of St. Bonaventure. UMass fans can feel a little more confident that they can maybe get to day two of the tournament with this, but I can tell you this right now. Myself, Daniel Frank, Zach Weiss, Zach Austin, and Jacob Munch, all of us are going to be sitting down to record a nice women's basketball podcast special on Monday night, and it should be going out before the tournament on Wednesday morning. So we will break down basically a lot of this, what's going to happen, as well as we're doing our thoughts of the all A-10 conference teams as well. So all that stuff will be broken down on that podcast. So honestly, if we may not go through 1 through 15, we'll at least talk about the top 4 or 5, maybe even the teams that could possibly be surprisers in the tournament, like Fordham has been in the past 3 weeks. So honestly, really on the women's side, it's open for anyone to win this thing. Because we saw a few years ago, It was VCU, UMass, and neither of them were within the top four seeds. UMass having been a seven seed and VCU, I believe, being, I forgot what they were, but both UMass and VCU weren't top seeds, and both of them were in the championship. So you really never know what's going to happen on A-10 women's basketball or on the A-10 men's basketball side either, with how the conference tournaments really play out. So I'm honestly looking forward to the women's side this weekend as well as the men's. So you never know what could happen.
Yeah, my game to watch for the weekend is the Dayton game, but not necessarily because I'm the Dayton guy. I think more so for the fact that we're playing Rhode Island. I am on the radio call for that game, confirmed noon game, for any UD radio listeners, if any of the five of them happen to be on the pod. But Rhode Island currently sitting at 9-8. Davidson, Loyola Chicago, Fordham, and SLU are all sitting at 8-9. Obviously, everybody's playing, except for UMass on Saturday. So there's going to be a ton of shifting around in that chunk of the conference. And, you know, for Dayton, we're really an 11 or 12, and that's just kind of what it is. Not a whole ton to, you know, change around for the Flyers. But with a Rhode Island loss, I'm not sure how all the tiebreakers work and stuff like that. I'm not, you know, up to date on who's got the win over who. If it's, you know, a 9-9 tie, I'm sure KG has some stats for me. But I just think that would be super interesting to see. Be a good win for Dayton at home, a good way to end our regular season. You know, as a Dayton guy, always fun to beat Rhodey. And just mixing up the middle of the pack, because there's about five teams fighting for those middle positions and, you know, getting the, you know, 5, 6, 7 seed is going to be, you know, probably a lot better than if you're stuck in that 9-10 or 11 and, you know, all to play for just on one day. So I'm sure those earlier games going to be checking the scores for the later games, vice versa. If you're playing later in the day, I'm sure they will be tuning into at least the box scores of those earlier games to try and figure out the seeding. You know, who's got to beat who lost to who, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so I do have my lovely tiebreakers out here for you. And, well, basically, one thing I know Zach Austin mentioned, who's one of our Rhode Island guys in that group chat, he mentioned that Rhode Island has never won in UD Arena in the series history of Dayton versus Rhode Island. So that is one thing.
My ears.
That's one thing to mention. But honestly, too, basically, if Rhode Island wins, they will be looking at clinched in the sixth seed. And then it gets a little sloppy after that. They could, if they lose and they fall to 9-9, they could still be the sixth seed. But then there's some possibilities of Loyola and Davidson and St. Louis to get the sixth seed, but St. Louis has the lowest probability of getting that sixth seed out of everyone. It just has, there's so much up in the air. Davidson and St. Louis basically will seal their own fates on however this, how whatever happens on lovely Saturday night for that. But honestly, Loyola can like go anywhere from being the sixth seed to the 10th seed. Davidson can be anywhere from the 6th seed to the 10th seed as well, but has higher chances of the 9th seed, and Loyola has the higher chances of the 8th seed, if I'm just looking at this correctly. Again, just trying to read it, and it's so small on my screen. But basically, it looks like, based off of everything I'm seeing, if I'm trying to make all of this make sense, it looks like Dayton is basically clinched in at the 11th seed unless they lose and GW wins. That's the only way it's going to happen. But if Dayton wins and GW loses, they're still at the 11th seed. It just depends on what happens in that Saturday thing. Does that make sense on what you're trying to ask me, Sean?
Yeah, absolutely. I saw Daniel, all those stats get thrown in. I'm a comm major for a reason. Numbers don't process like that for me. And so, you know, I'm a fan of the metrics. I'm a fan of the analytics. I'm glad that other people can do it because, you know, I'm not that guy for that sort of stuff. But absolutely going along with what I said on just there's so much to play for. And, like I said, not as much for Dayton. They're either going to be the 11 or 12. Obviously, love to get a higher seed. But that middle of the pack, you're going from 6 to 10, with a win or a loss. And, while, that's not a crazy drop, it can absolutely impact who you're going to play, obviously, in your first game of the tournament. And, the higher the seed, the easier the road is going to be, and just a little bit more rest time if you get that bye versus having to play in the first round, and all the things that we know about, getting a little bit of extra time off from the regular season, the grind. And it has been an injury plagued season for a number of teams, so I think that might be the biggest benefit of getting a bye on the women's side, is just that rest recovery can gear up and get ready to go for the A10 tournament.
I just quickly wanted to, obviously, I love to plug Loyola Women's Basketball in every show that I'm on. I think that's my game to watch this weekend simply because of just how much it can boost team morale, right? For a team that only won one game in conference play last year, they only won six games. It would just be great to see them get that bye, finish in the sixth seed because they do have the tiebreaker over Rhode Island. So Rhode Island loss against Dayton would help us out, and a win against George Washington would also be beneficial. But just there's just it would just be great to see that progression, right? Like everybody in the women's basketball community here at A10 Talk, they didn't think very highly of this Ramblers squad just at the beginning of the season in October. And I think it's just been awesome to see the progression from year two. Obviously, there's still a lot to work on. They are very hot and cold. You don't know what team you're going to get on a given night. They could be a team that loses to Richmond by four or only put up 36 against VCU or 35 against VCU, whatever they put up. It's just really depends. If the ball goes through the hoop, if they're getting good shots, if they're looking good on both sides of the ball, they're a team that I honestly, if you're in the Atlantic 10, I don't think you want to face Loyola. But again, it's all about who shows up. But if you get that bye, you get yourself rested, you get yourself right and adjusted to the tournament, you know how it runs now. I think this team, it would just be great for them and would mean so much to the program and Coach Guth as well. So that's all I've really got to say about Loyola basketball. Go Ramblers, and just excited to see how the games play out on the women's side too. It's been exciting to watch just how many teams are in it. It'd be cool to see. I think they might honestly have a better chance of getting two bids than the men do, but that's neither here nor there. So very, very exciting season for both men's and women's basketball, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to kind of circle back to your point, Sean, with understanding all of this. I'm a sport man major here at Western New England, and my sport man is within the College of Business, and I do a lot of stuff with business math. I don't understand half of this. Daniel would probably have to sit me down and explain every single part of this spreadsheet just so I could make sure I'm like talking about it correctly, but I think I did. But there's a whole bunch of if Mason's number one, then this is the possible outcome. If Mason's higher than this seed, then this is an outcome. If St. Joe's is this seed, it's all broken down, and I'm not going through that long list of trying to read through that table because I will somehow mess up, and I don't want to accidentally mess up what they have written. It's better to go check out that article. That article is definitely worth going and looking at. I mean, honestly, anyone in this field of 15 could really pull up upsets, but it's really within the top 10 that I'll say can really pull off any upsets, if anything. But Fordham could be a 9 seed now with a since they just had a huge win over St. Joe's. St. Joe's could finish at no worse, a love, I believe it's a 5 seed. Because of the tiebreaker, or because of losing to Fordham, as well as a loss to who is it? A loss to Duquesne, who they're playing on Saturday. Duquesne will clinch the 4 seed if they win on Saturday. Duquesne will clinch the 5 seed if they lose on Saturday. So it'll just depend on who it can be, honestly. So I think it'll be very interesting, but right now it looks like there's a very strong chance that Richmond will firm up the 1 seed, and Mason could be anywhere from the two from the one seed to the four seed, and Mason, since joining the conference, has not won a regular season title. So if George Mason can somehow do that in a turnaround from the 2020 to 21 season, Natalie and Daniel have talked a lot about that, where Mason did not win a single conference game all season, lost basically the entirety of it. And then year one, then they fired that coach and they brought in Vanessa Blair Lewis. And well, first season was, yeah, on the lower side, but the last season they went 500. And well, now this season they're contending for a regular season title. VCU is in contention for the 2-4 seed, won't finish any worse than fourth. But the Mason VCU game will be a huge thing on where Mason ends up in that bracket, as well as where Duquesne ends up, as well as St. Joe's, depending on all of that lovely math that Daniel did.
Yeah, a lot of important math for a very important Saturday. So make sure you go to a10talk.com and look at all the math that Daniel crunched for all of you to read and have the most knowledge possible heading into the final day of the regular season. And again, like KG said, after this podcast, we're going to have another full women's basketball preview of the Atlantic 10 Women's Basketball Championship dropping sometime next week. So keep your eyes out for that one. That's going to be a great show. But until then, keep following us on Twitter at A10 Talk. Keep going to A10Talk.com for updates on your favorite 15 teams. We're still 15. Keep following myself, Sam Basil, Kelly Godek, Sean Vitalis, William Bazone. Until then, we'll see you guys next time.